I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Home to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show, the run from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by Matthew Rocha. What's up, Matthew Rocha? There's so many.
So many Matts.
There's a lot of Matts. You know, I just call you Rocha. Yeah, so.
Just Rocha. That's how you differentiate me and Truex and everyone else. It's great. It's great to be here.
Good to have you back in Smallville, man. Season 6 is winding down. It's all over the place, really. But they do plant enough seeds and pay off enough stuff where it's like, you know, they put some thought into it. But what are your thoughts on Season 6, Mike? Because I've been low on Season 6. But as we approach the end, I'm like, you know what? I still don't know what I think about it because it is kind of all over the place, I feel.
It's funny because actually Season 6 is one of my favorite seasons. I think for obvious reasons, the rise of Lex Luthor as the villain is really what makes it such a fun season for me as a big Lex Luthor fan to really see. And this episode just exemplifies all of that, you know, him being the iconic Lex Luthor from the comics at this point. So that's one of the reasons I love Season 6 and the formation of the Justice League, all of those things. But there are certain plots that definitely feel a little bit like it was Act 1 at the beginning, and then there was a shift a little bit, like the whole like Lexana thing was always uncomfortable to watch, to say the least. But then it seemed I like the whole Lex faking the pregnancy storyline, but it did seem a little out of nowhere. It seemed more like they were building towards a Rosemary's Baby, you know, a mutant demonic thing or something. And then they decided, that was too much. They scratched it. I always wondered that. Have you always wondered that? If the plot changed? There are just certain things like that where it seemed like the plot changed or the original idea may have changed in the middle.
I would say they probably didn't know what they were going to do. That's what I would say. Like, I think they were just keeping their options open, you know. And you know, I agree. Like, you could have like Lex used alien DNA, right? Or you know, there's so many things he could have done. That's why I would say some things might not add up because they just weren't sure. It's like because the beginning of the season is so Green Arrow heavy, right? And yes, and culminates yes, in Justice, which is great. And then you never, they're gone. You know, like it's, we got to go, you know, actually in this episode, they have a couple of references. They keep kind of mentioning them like, they tease you that way. So you're like, oh, well, I guess they're going to come back. Right. In the season finale, yeah. They don't. Did you ever see, and we'll cover these on the podcast. Don't worry. They're on the Season 6 Blu-ray. There were these motion comic tie-ins called Smallville Legends, Justice yes. and Doom. All right. Did you yes. see these?
Great. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Oh gosh. You're taking me back to like, pre-conscious right now. This is incredible. This is so nostalgic. Yeah.
You know, they had done the Chloe Chronicles and the Vengeance Chronicles and like, oh, they're going to keep these things going great. And then this year they're like decided we're going to do comics now. We're not going to, I'm like, oh, they didn't want to pay Justin Hartley for a web series, for a tie-in, for a product placement. I guess not. Right.
He probably would have been great. That would have been,
that awesome. Would have been fantastic. Right. But it was a 5-volume motion comic and they aired like during the commercial breaks.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they collected them and you could see them and it, you know, it was some kind of, I'm not sure what the product tie-in was. I haven't watched these in a while, but I know that the events that they reference in this episode, where they're like, oh, well, I talked to Oliver, and here's what he said he had to do. I'm like, this is what that is referencing. So I just,
oh, that's hilarious.
I just wanted to bring that up because they fight some of the super soldiers. Like, what we thought we were going to get in the season finale for Season 6, they just did in that, comic book,
like,
right?
We'll do it here. And then, well, wasn't that the, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that the original plan for Phantom was going to be like a whole battle of the super soldiers.
Well, it certainly seemed that way, didn't it, Matt? I mean, I just like
I thought I read somewhere that was the plan and they didn't have the budget or something.
Well, and before we jump into the episode here, we can talk a little bit about season six, right? Because it was there's so many, that's what's so frustrating me about a lot of the plot lines. Like, we got Bizarro, right? Yep. But he had nothing to do with any of this. Like, I'm like, it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have Lex Luthor, and as this episode is about, like, a prototype super soldier, Lex Luthor controlling superpowered beings, is he's, I mean, that's on track for this show. It's on track for Lex Luthor in the comic books, you know, the
classic. Yeah.
And that's like, oh, okay, well, we have Clark's blood out there. We're cloning aliens, right? We have mind control. I'm like, okay, well, this is all going to culminate at some point in Bizarro.
Yes, I thought the same thing watching it back in the day,
And like even way back in like season two, they were talking about cloning, and you're like, oh, I know.
Yes.
They're going to get Clark's blood, but they use meteor rock, and that's going to get warped, and that's why you get Bizarro. It's like, it's right there.
Exactly.
It's right there.
It's the perfect plot.
And then they do this whole season of like Phantom Zone criminals and wraiths, and then Lex Luthor's building super soldiers over here, and those do not interact at all. The only reason they do is because he's trying to get alien DNA to help a super soldier serum out. And then that totally, literally gets wiped out at the end of the season by a flood.
Yes, it's just, and that was such a cool set too. I would have loved to have seen it last a few more episodes at least. It was such a great set.
Oh yeah. Well, and then they love the last shot of this episode so much they pretty much use it again in the season finale. But we'll get there, right? So that's a good rehearsal. But yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like season six, it's like, yeah, that's, oh cool, we got Bizarro. I mean, that's next week, right? But it's like, just because a Phantom Zone guy like stole your DNA, that's not how Bizarro works.
It would have been so cool to have Lex Luthor masterminding that after the whole buildup, like you said, to it. Like last we knew, right? He had Clark's DNA. Of course, he didn't know it was Clark's, but he had it, and he quote unquote destroyed it, right? As he told Helen, but like it's Lex, so he obviously could still have a sample, and then boom, it's like perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. It's crazy. It's just like, I don't know. So I don't know what outside forces cause him to do this or that. Like cause I would say like, well, back before I started this whole thing, my bottom three seasons was like, okay, four and then seven. And then I guess six. And then, but season four and seven, there's all these external reasons. Like, okay, hey, Christopher Reeve passed away. Like, what are we going to do now? Like, oh, let's bring in, Jane Seymour and let's, okay.
Yeah.
And then season seven, obviously there's a writer's strike. Half your cast leaves the show, right? Yeah. So that, there's a lot. So it's like, okay, but Veritas is very problematic, but we'll talk about that next season, man.
It's been here all along.
You've seen it every season. Six, there's really no excuse. There's no excuse. If you knew you couldn't bring back the Justice League, then why you keep talking about them? It reminds me, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of season eight, right? When Rosenbaum left.
Yeah.
And for the first half of season, like, oh, we're going to find Lex. We're going to find, Lex.
All these cool little teases throughout the whole thing. And you're like, oh, they must be planning, you know.
And Rosenbaum's like, no, I'm not coming back at all. And then we're like, well, I guess we'll kill him off. But anyway, again, we'll get it. So anyway, season six, I've found, you know, hot take. I think I might have and I said this in last week's podcast, like, I think the highs are higher and the lows are lower maybe in the second half, because the Green Arrow stuff is like consistently interesting and fresh.
Totally, totally. That shakes things up at the beginning. Yeah.
And that's great. But there's a lot of middling stuff with these Phantom Zoners of the week, right? But then you get to the second half, right? And you get some really great stuff like Labyrinth and Nemesis.
Yeah.
Potentially this episode. We'll talk about it here in a second, right? But then you get your stuff like Progeny and Noir. And I'm like, what is this?
You know, it was so funny because I've been meaning to catch up on all of your episodes, and I didn't get to listen to Progeny yet, but I saw your grade on it and I was cracking up because I didn't think it was that bad, but I thought it was really funny. You graded it like a D, right?
It was a D plus.
I was thinking about the continuity errors in my head though with that one. Those, they stand out more in that one than in a lot of episodes.
Well, I mean, that was so frustrating. I mean, that's probably half the podcast of me just complaining about, like, that makes Veritas look like a very well-crafted retcon, right? It's like, did you guys watch Smallville before you wrote this episode? But anyway, so that's what I'm saying. So I think it's a price, if you told me, and we say this because we're winding down the season, right? But it's like, if you told me before I go into this that I would like say the second half was better than the first. Like I would have shocked myself, but I think it might have been. I think it might have been.
Yeah, I think it really, it's interesting. I think it really, like, it's interesting because, in, like you said, in the first half that you have the great aspects like Green Arrow, the buildup to the Justice League, and those elements. But then you also have, to me, like, you have the, in the beginning of season six, the Lexana stuff was really like, where is this going? It feels kind of like filler.
Yeah, because they were in love. And like, they genuinely, and like, I don't want that. Like, now it's interesting because she's like trapped.
Gets, exactly. It gets way more interesting.
Bad decisions that she made. And yeah, so. So here we are. Prototype, right? Interesting fact, our guest star of the episode, Tammo Pinnicott, whose name I always struggle with saying, he basically plays the same character on Smallville that he did in season three, a guy who comes back from the dead from the Luther Corp experiment.
That's right. It's a, I remember when I first saw the episode and I was like, wait, this guy's really familiar. And then I looked and saw, oh, it's him. That's hilarious.
Well, he gets more to do here than he did in Resurrection, honestly. But it is funny that, like, you know, we see a lot of returning actors because, you know, Canada and all that stuff, right? So you see that, but then you don't, they don't play the same basic. Now, this character's different, but bottom line, he's a guy who died, who was brought back to life from a Luther Corp experiment. Like, that's if one sentence description of this guy, it's the same thing.
They must have thought he had a very Lazarus touch about
I guess so.
They didn't call the episode Lazarus. I mean, I know that's coming in season
It's coming time, up. But... Like, oh, well, what have we not used yet? There we go. But, you know, I like him as an actor. I really like him on Battlestar Galactica. He was one of my favorite characters. But probably my favorite character on BSG, to be honest, because he was like... the most heroic character. I mean, Battlestar Galactica was interesting because everybody had like shades of gray, right? But I feel like of all Hilo was his character there. I feel like of all the characters, he was like the most, like, you know, square cut hero kind of guy. I don't know, right?
I haven't seen it, but I can already picture it just based on his performance in this. I can totally see him as that archetype, like just embodying that classic hero.
And you need characters like that on BSG to kind of balance out just the but it's a fantastic show. I really recommend anybody who watched the new Battlestar Galactica. New, I call it new. It's like new. 17 years old now. newer than the original Battlestar Galactica, but he's great in that. And then he goes on to be in other shows. I mean, he's on Arrow for a couple episodes. He's the guy who killed Huntress's fiance.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, I feel like I've seen him in some other recent like sci-fi stuff too.
Man of Steel.
Of course. Oh, I can't believe that. Yes. I feel ashamed.
Yeah, he's one of the government guys in Man of Steel, as most of the supporting cast and guest stars on Smallville turn out to be.
Yes.
But you know, but this is talking about continuity, right? The episode before the last episode. Noir is just a waste of time, but in Nemesis. Right, we tease his character, right, and we actually see his picture and his body, and that kind of leads directly into what we're doing here. And then last bit of trivia here, Prototype, even though it aired second to last, it was actually filmed third to last. They apparently filmed it before Noir, and there's a couple things in it that and I don't know why. Like I saw that, like, because there's I always go back to Star Trek, right. Unification, Part 1 and 2. It was the Next Generation 2-parter where Leonard Nimoy was the guest star.
Yeah.
They filmed Part 2 first because of Leonard Nimoy's schedule. Yeah. And it's just that's weird, but sure, right? So anyway, but there's a reason. I understand I have no understanding of why.
Why this? Because it's like, it's all the same.
Same sets. It's like the cat. It makes more sense. I don't get it. But you can tell here. A couple things threw me off, though, right? Because I was trying to see, okay, what are the visual signifiers? Lionel's beard, right?
The beard,
He is still...
It's like...
There's more to it, right?
Yeah.
And in Noir, he shaved his beard and had a little mustache.
Yeah, totally, which is really weird.
Right, which is very odd to see John Glover and Lionel Luther that way. But then, at least at this age, right, for him. And then in Phantom, the season finale... Lionel's got like, oh man, did you just shave yesterday? Kind of look on it. It's a different look for him.
Yeah,
but that makes sense. Like if you look at the episodes, okay, that makes sense.
How
right?
it was filmed. Yeah, exactly.
And then I thought to myself, oh, Chloe's hair, right? Chloe's hair is still like it was before Noir. This is the best thing about noir is Chloe's hair. I think that's a much better look for her. The late season six Chloe hair, I wasn't really a fan of.
Yeah, yeah, it looked great in noir, and just the whole Chloe-ness of that too. She totally got that mid-Atlantic accent.
Yeah, like,
perfect.
But then I'm like, okay, I see. Her hair is the same as it was before this, so I'm sure in Phantom it'll look like it did in noir. It doesn't. It goes back to this. So I don't know. So that really, my research is a wash, is what I'm saying. So,
and the reasons remain perplexing. Like,
I don't know. Like we it's so funny. Like Matt Truex, right? They have on Lois and Clark. They have a 102-103 gate is what they call it, because like the first season, like the third and second episode were like switched in production and air date order. So it's like hilarious. And they can never really find out why, but if you look at it in the story, it makes sense to be the other way around. Anyway, it's just one of these weird things that Krypton site found out about it back in the day. It was on the episode, like the script production order numbers were yes. opposite of Noir and Prototype. Yeah. And I was hoping to find more information before, like, I was like gonna bring it up last time, like, no, let me look a little deeper. Nothing more to be found.
It just
is. So there you go. There's your pregame. But let's get into it then. Prototype.
Mr. Luther.
3 years and $1 billion spent on Ares, and you're telling me you lost him?
Well, we're in uncharted territory here, Mr. Luther. Synthesizing multiple meteor abilities is difficult enough, but stringing together the molecular chain with peptides extracted from that creature that Bartlett recovered...
The only thing that allows all these abilities to exist in one subject. Titan's genetic material was the key to making this project viable.
Yes, which makes the results as unpredictable as the substances I'm being asked to work with.
What you're being asked to do is help protect the world, Doctor. Unstable criminals with dangerous powers are becoming more and more common. Humanity's only chance to survive in the onslaught is this project. So kick that big brain of yours in high gear and figure out what the hell went wrong.
It's possible something might have triggered a decay in his memory blocks, a familiar place or person.
Can't you get a fix on him?
The field he generates makes it impossible to track him electronically. It's part of his design.
I want our dog back on his leash, Doctor, or you'll be my next experiment.
Prototype is the 21st episode of Smallville's 6th season. It aired on May 10th, 2007, was written by Stephen S. DeKnight, and directed by Matt Beck. Now, Matt Beck, this is his first time directing an episode, but he had worked on the effects team for a long time on the show. And in Smallville, the official companion season 6 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, he had this to say about directing for the first time. Quote, the actors are so strong and willing when it comes to being abused on set in order to make the scene look great. We throw them around, choke them, hang them on wires, and they come back for more. Besides being terrific actors, they're pretty tough when they have to be. So
that's great. That's a great quote.
And then I've seen a lot of this season. I mean, you know, the show's going on 6 years now, and I see a lot of like people coming up through the ranks, and that's good to see as well.
Yeah, that's huge. That's so, and that explains a lot, seeing someone coming from that background directing this episode. Like you could really see that as like one of the strengths of the episode.
Definitely
the visuals and all the effects that go into it. It feels really real and visceral.
For sure. Yeah. Big fan of Predator maybe as well. Matt Beck might be, I don't know. But I didn't remember this episode that well, but but when it started on a satellite, I was a little confused. It's like, what are we doing? The Wayne satellite's going by.
Yes, exactly. When I was rewatching it last night, preparing for this, just seeing that opening shot too, it was very. It, to me, it felt very 2001. That moment, and then as the camera pans down and shows Luther Corp, that just made me smile. It's like Lex Luthor, like taking over Earth and the stratosphere. I love it.
Yeah, we do like a scan of the Earth and keep going in and in and in, and then it becomes like a graphic, and then you zoom in, and it's the Reeves Dam facility for Project Ares.
So cool.
And we get Lex, and we get Bartlett, which is his, again, talking about continuity in the last half of season 6, Bartlett, this guy, is like his secondhand guy, has been here, and I'm like, okay, good on you, right, for being like, because he has so many like disposable, you know, security people, right, and this guy sticks around for a few. Speaking of disposable security people, talk us through this scene, Roka.
Oh gosh, what a great, great opener. Like, just that, just the way that it opens, you know, we see Lex's facility supposedly being infiltrated, and we see all the best men, the best security men being disposed and dispatched. And the whole time, I remember when I watched it for the first time, Michael Rosenbaum, again, just the nuances of his acting and everything, you really, watching it initially, it feels like Lex is actually concerned with what's happening.
Yeah, it feels like an authentic situation.
Authentic moment, yeah. And then to see that it's all been manufactured by Lex and in such a cold-hearted manner for him to just say, oh, well, the best of my security men and they're all disabled. Good, not a bad test run. Let's see him do it again. Like that moment to me, just in just 30 seconds or whatever that was, a minute, encapsulated who Lex Luthor is and who he's becoming. You know, that was just comic book Lex.
Yeah, I mean, he is. There's no question anymore. Like he is a villain now, right? I mean, he is a bad guy because he is. I mean, they're having this test for this prototype of their super soldier. It is very effective. It's like if there were a Superman movie and they had just discovered Doomsday, end of the earth, right? This is the scene where him like this is what I'm thinking. I'm like, man, we're so close to all these things. But like, you know, there's some LexCorp experiments. They've gone too far. They've gone too wrong. Something's going crazy, slaughtering everybody. Like you said, it's very effective. You don't know what's going on. Do you think they're not showing you what's going on? I mean, the guy's invisible, I guess, as well. So that's part of why you can't see. So that's a good way to save money. But yeah, I mean, he bursts through and you know, you're really like, oh God, right? He comes in, right? Goes right up to Lex and Lex pulls a gun on him and he's like, oh, mission accomplished, awaiting next order. I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. And I like the way they have Wes Keenan, it's the character, you know, from that we'd established a couple episodes ago. I like how they have him talk. How he's like he really is just like a blank slate because they're programming him like a computer, as he should be, right? It's very, also, it's like what it really reminded me of, and this is before that, so Smallville did it first, X-Men Apocalypse, where Wolverine breaks out. Yeah, slaughtering everybody. Yes. The best scene of that movie, by the way.
Again, Smallville did it first. Smallville did so many things first. It's true.
But you know who else is there with Lex and Bartlett and Wes Keenan? It's a doctor. Dr. Donovan Jameson. All right. Now, he's an actor, Gerard Plunkett. He played this same character in the Chloe Chronicles.
Whoa, I totally forgot about this.
We were just talking about Justice of Doom.
That's crazy.
They bring this guy back. It's insane. Like,
that's insane.
Not just like, the actor, the same character.
Such a niche little, like, you know, Easter egg to have just, it's like you said with Bartlett too. I mean, to have that, to keep that continuity of that that's really cool.
Yeah. And he's not just a one and done. He's a two and done. He didn't last past the season finale, but I'm like, this is cool. Like I applaud the world building, right? I mean, for mid 2000s TV, this is like, wow, this is mind blowing stuff.
Yeah. Actual continuity. And this episode in general really has a lot of strong continuity. Like we'll get to that later, but there's so much, mm-hmm. referencing earlier seasons and earlier freaks, and it felt really like they were really doing this great job of building the world and you know, the mythos of Smallville like that, which is really cool.
Well, the reason we like that is because it pays off the fact that we've been watching and paying attention to the show.
Yeah, we're like they it's like a little treat for us.
We're talking about how frustrating it was with Progeny a couple episodes back. I'm like, this is the anti that. Yes. Because it's like, oh, all that
the
stuff.
Because
like, you could say like, why does that bother you? Who cares? I'm like, well, like it does. I've been investing my time and life in this show for years, and you're like telling me it didn't matter. So anyway, that's why we connect with this stuff so well.
Yes.
But anyway, we have this great opening here, and as you said, Lex has the great line. He's like, find some fresh guards. I want to see him do it again. I'm like, it's so super villain, and like little no regard for human life. To your point, that's Lex Luthor. That's Lex Luthor there at this point. So go to the opening credits, we come back, and I feel like this is a new angle of the Luthor Mansion. I don't know. I'm just so used to the same seven shots. I felt like this is a different angle. I maybe it's not, maybe we've seen it before, because it's like when we see Kent Farm and Luthor Mansion, I turn my brain off and assume that I've seen
that
before.
That same. Yeah, exactly.
And it's so telling of the Lex Lana relationship at this point. And I think that's why that you and I were just, you know, talking earlier. Like we connect to this last half more than the first half, especially with them.
Yeah.
It's because it's creepy music, because it's like, it's an unhealthy.
Yeah.
The show knows it now. That was the problem. The show was like celebrating it to a point. Like you should like trying to make us root for it in some ways.
Totally.
And
you're
I'm
right.
like, I don't know.
Right.
No, this
you're
is
right.
wrong. And now it's like, okay, it's wrong. We know. And I feel like we're all on the same page now.
That's a really good. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it for sure. It feels like we're in good hands because they're telling us this is wrong. And they're telling us this is a dangerous, awful situation. And it doesn't feel like, oh, cool, let's ship Lexana.
Yeah, let's have some pop music. They're going to hook up. Yeah, anyway. But, you know, Lex is, you know, he's trying to be, you know, sweet and touch her on the shoulder. And you can tell she's like, ugh. But she's got a great excuse. She's like, oh, my shoulder's still sore.
Yeah, that was great.
Because she got shot last week. And, like, again, like, how many episodes of Smallville are people break an arm or get shot? And then the next week, no mention. They're totally fine. I'm not saying we see everybody on crutches every week, but some acknowledgement, right? But that's great, right? It's her way of, like, get your hands off me. I hate you. You're a monster, right?
Yes.
And also legitimate excuse.
Yeah, but I feel like this is the first time since John Glover with the scar on his face.
Which, again, I must believe that he actually got hit in the face with the shotgun. There's no way they would do that on purpose.
No, I think he totally did, for sure. I think because he even mentioned in the book that he doesn't usually like to do, like, fight scenes. So he probably
told John Schneider, just hit me in the face real hard. I'm like, right, you sure? Anyway. This is a good, you know, a slice of what's going on with Lex and Lana. But then Senator Burke arrives.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
She's got to excuse herself. And she's like, I'll be in the garden. She's not going to the garden. She's going around the corner to eavesdrop, right? And again, this is the continuity, right? As worthless as an episode noir was in the grand scheme of things, right? We saw, you know, security footage, right, of Lex and this senator talking. Yes. So I'm like, continuity, very good.
That was great.
Episode title said an episode plus one because Lex tells him the prototype.
Prototype.
It's in the final stages of testing. But interesting, the senator, he's wise to what Lex has got going on. He's like, really? I heard you're much further along. I've heard you already started mass production. So I'm like, wow, okay. I like it when Lex, I mean, we always love Lex being in control of everything. But then when he gets thrown off by somebody else, that really drives him into doing his villainy. So.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the reasons I love this scene so much, because it felt like, in some ways, even though that was last episode noir, but in some ways, this felt like an old noir gangster kind of genre where you're seeing the like shady behind the scenes dealings of the bad guys, and to see someone match wits with Lex like that. And I mean, of course, you know, we know that Lex is going to triumph, but to see that challenge with this guy and to see that he's, you know, corrupt, just as corrupt as Lex is, was really fun to see them playing off of each other. And to see also, like, he's such an older guy compared to Michael Rosenbaum, so it's kind of fun to see, like, he's probably the sort of guy who would have done dealings with Lionel, and now he's dealing with the son, and he's like, oh, this punk kid, oh, whatever. He doesn't know who he's dealing with.
And there's something that, again, makes it feel... Smallville, because there's multiple Luthers, not many people call Lex Luther, right?
Yes.
But when they do, like, the senator calls him Luther out there, and he's like, we understand each other, Luther. I'm like, it makes you feel more like you're watching Superman stuff, right?
Totally, totally.
Because that's how he's referred to, so, in other versions, so.
Yeah, it feels like a Superman movie at that point, for sure, or a comic.
So they're basically, he wants to shut it down. Lex doesn't want to. They keep threatening each other. And by that point, you can basically see on Lex's face, he's like, oh, I understand you perfectly. Like, yeah, you're dead. This guy's so dead.
Yes. Rosenbaum gives this great little look where he's kind of like, oh, well, that's too bad. Like, you know, I didn't want to kill him, but okay.
He made his choice. And then, of course, you know, Lana is like around the corner listening to everything. Right. And then we cut to Luther Corp, which is, I don't know if this is a new CGI establishing shot either.
Yeah, that looked kind of different, didn't it? Yeah.
But it's different because they've kind of built out Metropolis more, because like, I guess we're going to be here for a while. We can't keep using that crane up shot from Luther Corp Plaza with that smoke and the same 12 people walking by. But anyway, Lionel's in his office. He's watching the Ares DVD that Lana took from Lex's suitcase a couple episodes ago. So continuity. And you ask yourself, how did Lionel become in possession of this? We find out in a deleted scene for Phantom, which is next week's episode. She's like, I gave you that DVD.
I forgot about that, yeah.
It's interesting that they reveal that then, but then delete it. And then you're like, well, how did he get that DVD? I mean, maybe, who knows?
It's like with Lionel, it's almost like the he's Batman excuse.
Yeah, well, he's Lionel, right? He's Lionel. Now, I thought this was very interesting. So he's... We're not thinking about Bizarro right now, right? Because that's not where we are. And I don't even think spoilers were coming out about that. Like, it was just like, that was such a surprise, really, in the season finale, right?
That was a shock.
Just like, oh, there's no big bad villain. Who's he going to fight? Himself? But Lionel's sitting there, you know, because he had been writing Kryptonian symbols, right, even this season, right, after even though Jor-El's presence had left him. Mm-hmm. He's watching this footage, right, for that we saw before of the Phantom attacking the people with the camera. And he writes down mirror.
That's right. Yes, mirror.
So I'm like, oh, well, that's why he doubles Clark later on. That's really the only explanation. Because he's like possessing other human, like, you know, to kind of look forward, right? In the season finale, he's possessing other humans, and then he can't stand it. He needs a Kryptonian body to sustain himself because he's some kind of Krypton. This is some kind of lab experiment, as it's subscribed to us. So that's the best explanation we get. So that's why, you know, and I want to look, and you know, I'll look for the social media and stuff when we post this episode. But, you know, the mirror box in season 10. Like,
that's right.
Shouldn't that have the same symbol if it says me? Yeah. I don't know. So where did Lionel get that anyway? We'll find out in a few seasons, but
he's Lionel.
But anyway, he's onto this. He knows what's up. So again, interesting stuff here with Lionel. Then talking about, you know, direction. I really like the shot of Clark when he walks in the office. It's like, I don't know, it just tracks in and kind of gets like Clark's center frame. He's like, we need to talk. It's a very like hero looking shot. I really liked it.
It's great. It feels, like you said, a really hero looking shot. It feels really like Clark means business. And it's really, it's kind of cool when you actually see the tables turn and Clark's not being, you know, Mr. Nice Guy anymore. And he's just like, it's a very like Superman Luthor kind of.
Yeah.
Scene in a Superman movie, you
know? Exactly. And Lionel, he's like, "Oh, Clark, you should really try picking up a phone. It would be faster, but maybe not for you.
Maybe not for you."
It's so good, right? He's like, "We need to talk. We need to talk about Lana." And then Lionel's like, "Letting go is never one of your strong points."
I love that. That was good.
And then, of course, Clark tells him telling the truth is never one of yours, right? So it's this good conflict between them. And you know, it reminded me a lot. You know, you were on Mercy. Last episode on season 5. This reminds me a lot of the last scene between them, right?
Yeah, it really reminds me a lot of that, for sure. Like when he threatens him about the gloves coming off, it really reminded me of that with, you know, if you stay away from my mother, like that whole kind of thing. Actually, funny thing, note I had on that moment too was my buddy, back when we were in high school, I would always, you know, come and quote Smallville and talk about how cool the episode was to him. And, you know, he would catch little bits here and there, but he wasn't like a big fan or anything, but he was like, he'd check out little things and I would show him parts of it, you know, for inspiration for the movies we were making and stuff. I think it was this episode, you know, he saw the preview where Clark's like, the gloves are off, like, you know, whatever. And then my friend Vinny was like, wait, is this Superman? Like, he's always threatening people in these previews. The gloves are off. And this is, I was like, you need to see it in context. Okay. It works great in context. Like,
man, I don't know if Superman was that hardcore. but I really like it when they're adversarial like this.
Yeah, it's great.
Clark is like, hey, if I ever find out that you had anything to do with Lana wearing Lex, you know, your gloves are going to come off, like we said. And Lionel, again, we're just going to quote all the dialogue because it's so great. But Lionel's like, well, you'd be surprised what people would do when they have no other option. And then Clark, not very good with the comebacks. I love this. He's like, okay, well, gloves are going to come off. How do you like that option? I'm like, wow. Like, I don't know. This is great stuff with these guys. So, and you know, I've heard Tom Welling talk, you know, about how like John Glover is like he's a beast, right? And he's an amazing actor. And like, you try to raise yourself up to the performance. Yes. I can tell whenever they have scenes together, they really shine.
Yeah, you can definitely see it. And it's really fun to see them get to have such an expanded relationship in, like, you know, season 5, season 6, and then at the end of season, like, you know, all the way through season 7. It's really fun to see, like, before, you know, Lionel was the evil old man and Clark was just the kid, mm-hmm. like not knowing who he's dealing with or how to deal with these adult, you know, dark situations that Lionel put people in. But it's fun to see now, like, Clark as a man standing toe to toe with him and all the secrets being out there, mm-hmm. not being afraid of him at all. It's great.
Absolutely. So let me go to the Talon, and Chloe is being comforted by Lois with some coffee, the fact that Jimmy's gone.
Oh, yes.
I was actually surprised. I was like, oh, he left a couple episodes early. so they're like, let's get him out of here. Do you have any takes on Jimmy? You know, you haven't talked on the show since he's been back. What are your thoughts on that, his whole deal?
I really like Jimmy. I was really bummed when It turned out
when he wasn't Jimmy.
But he wasn't Jimmy. That really was heartbreaking and just lame. I really loved what Aaron Ashmore did. I felt like he was a perfect casting choice. He was just, he was equal parts, you know, comedic relief and heart. Like you could just really see he wore his heart on his sleeve. He was this sweet, goofy guy, you know, and he really felt like because his performance was so great at embodying that kind of naivety that Jimmy would have and everything. Like it never bothered me that, I know some fans were really bothered, like, oh, Jimmy's supposed to be like, you know, way younger than Superman or whatever. Like it never bothered me at all. I thought,
well, they fixed that.
Yeah. Oh God. I spoke too soon, but yeah, I never, because his performance felt so much younger than Tom's, even though they were probably comparable in terms of age. Like it felt like he was this young, energetic guy. And I thought they played really well off of each other.
I'm all over the place with him. Sometimes I'm like, you know, if you hear me on the podcast, I'm like, who is this guy coming to here messing up my Chloe and Clark shipping? And then who is this guy? But this is like a perfect example of like why I'm like, I don't know. Maybe they just never figured out how to make him stick. I liked him like the first half of season 8 the best. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. He's working with Lois. Yeah. He's, you know, doing things. Identity is a good episode for him. But he always, they just had like we have a couple episodes here to wrap up the season, like some epic stuff going on. And like, okay, let's get him out of here. Like they just remove, because it's like he's so like auxiliary to what they're doing. They can just remove him and he's more of an annoyance to have around.
Yeah.
So that's my point there. And so yeah, it's just maybe I don't believe them when they tell me, like, because I think they said, well, we always knew he wasn't going to be the real. I'm like, I don't believe you.
I do not believe that for a second. I'm sorry, guys. I do not. That's like Veritas. Like,
I don't believe that they didn't think he was real Jimmy Olsen. So I guess ultimately my problem with it is like, I know that he cannot know Clark's secret, especially this early. Absolutely. Right. And for the 5 minutes in Doomsday, I'm like, oh, wow, Jimmy's going to know a secret. I actually felt pretty good about that.
Yeah.
You're my pal, Jimmy, or whatever. Does he say? I think he says that in the episode.
I think he does. Yeah.
Oh, man. And I'm like, great. Here he is to stay. Nope. Yeah. But since he's not here for the serious stuff and all this, like, that's my point. They always had to like make him look like an idiot.
Yes, because that's the problem for sure. Like,
whenever he's on to like he really has found some stuff out, and Chloe's like, "Oh, you're just being silly, Jimmy Olsen," because he can't. So I'm like, why you always got to like undercut this guy and play him for laughs constantly? So maybe that's ultimately what it comes down to.
You know what? It's kind of the you know, like what you've talked about with the Lois in season 4 syndrome, right? Where it's always
not just 4,
like,
but.
Well, yes, a bit longer than 4, but you know what I mean? Like, it's, I feel like the plan, if there was a plan with him, but it didn't quite work out that way, obviously, was probably, you know, goofy guy, comedic relief. Are those symbols from the Egyptians? You know, like stupid stuff like that. And then eventually we see how he transforms into a really iconic investigative reporter, right?
Yeah, because he can be comic relief without being the butt of everyone's joke.
Every joke, yes. And I feel bad. I also feel bad for, I just constantly find myself feeling bad for him too. Everyone's making fun of him behind his back.
Doesn't even know. His girlfriend is just like talking down to him. I mean, she's going to have secret conversations with her other best friends. So anyway, that's where he comes with Jimmy. And you know, to your point about Lois, she actually is becoming Lois here in this episode because she's off.
Yeah,
you know,
this is great. Lois
Clark
episode.
Comes in to talk, and Lois is like, well, I'm off to cover a big story, right? And she leaves. I'm like, okay, good. Well, is one thing that, like, if you're not paying attention, you kind of miss it. But they are shifting Lois slowly towards her destiny this season. We'll follow up with Lois in a bit, right? But what this is mainly about, right, is Clark, he follows up with Chloe about Lionel, and then he's mad at Chloe that no one is telling him the truth. So if someone would just tell Clark the truth here, solve some problems. But you know, Lionel's obviously not telling him anything. Chloe doesn't want to tell him because Lana didn't want Chloe to tell him because so that's where we are. But then following Lois, she ambushes Senator Burke at a restaurant. She pays off a guy who works there.
Such a cool Lois moment.
Absolutely.
So Lois from the comics. So great.
she goes up to this little Senator. He's going to some back alley at some restaurant. And she's like, oh yeah, I'm a reporter. I want an interview. He's like, okay, you can call my office. And she's like, well, you know, I did, and no one returned my calls. And to make this guy double evil, to make you feel extra okay that they're gonna kill him off brutally, he has a very chauvinist attitude towards her as well. He's like, "What does that tell you, sweet cakes?"
Yes, whatever. Cakes.
I'm like, "All right, well, okay, now we feel fine with you dying now because you're just a terrible person." You know, his posse is gonna have her, you know, taken away. She's like, "Hey, get your hands off me!" Right, and then out of nowhere, like these guys start just dying. Right. Do we see I don't know if we see any predator vision here.
I don't think we do.
No,
yet.
This is all Lois's like point of view.
Yeah, her point of view. Right. And then the quick, you know, the blade through
the senator. Like, right.
Yeah, that's such a moment.
That is messed up, right? So what happens here? Would he have killed Lois as well? But because, well, obviously, you know, he decloaks, so to speak, right? Yeah. He kills everyone but her, and he's like holding the knife, and she's like, "Wes," and he like freezes for a minute and then doesn't finish that job. I assume that's the only reason he didn't kill her as well.
Because like his remembrance of her got through the programming, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, because I'm sure Lex would have commanded like kill, you know,
everyone, no witnesses.
Yeah.
Like. Then we cut, you know, to the Daily Planet the next morning, I assume. Plus one for Blue Shirt Red Jacket. Clark's now in his classic Blue Shirt Red Jacket. And the word on the street is that the senator was in with the mob and he got the Fredo treatment because, you know, pop culture references. I knew it was you.
Also, going back to season one, why does everyone quote The Godfather? Yeah.
You guys are still not over 30. You shouldn't be quoting The Godfather. It's like, did they think Lex was 30 in that episode? Because they haven't quoted. I'm like, no, he's, I mean, Rosamund's 30, but Lex is like 21. Like, but anyway, Chloe tells Clark there's a witness, right? And it's Lois, and she's still like covered in blood stuff. You know, I mean, it was a nasty, nasty incident there. She tells them that she knows who it was. It was Wes Keenan, and they were kids, and they were both, you know, army brats going around from base to base, and so they have a history there. He was more decorated than a Christmas tree. and also that the general liked him and he hates everyone. So that's
that's great.
Some good description of her from her on Wes. And they're like, okay, I buy it, you know, military history. And Chloe did a little research and turns out he's dead.
And it was really cool to see the whole episode was a great Lois episode, to see like more of her backstory, to see more of the military, you know, background. And I always think it's fun when we get to see those things that are just referenced all the time in dialogue, to really see it play out and see like the friendships or associations you would have had.
Yeah, I think sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, but I think this time it works. So, yes. And then Wes is, you know, back at base and he has an alpha wave spike. Like, what does that mean? Like, oh, it's probably nothing. And that's obviously his personality, you know, reemerging here.
Yeah.
Tally board question here. He has amnesia from who he was because he didn't remember Lois. So we're gonna count that as one.
As one, yes.
And he's obviously being mind controlled here by Lex, but I feel like when he was reset and turned into this prototype, he got like, that's a one mind control and one amnesia count. That's a solid one.
One. Yeah. Yes.
Because like, you can do all this. That was the one event that happened, and anyway,
it's all rather than
like every single time I send him on a mission
again. Amnesia again.
We're not doing that, okay? I think the logic set. Would you agree with the logic there? We're gonna get with one.
I do
more.
Agree
okay.
with the logic. That
so
makes sense.
So we got those for Wes going on this episode, right? You know, Lex is like, he's really like pushing the doctors to figure this out. Like, he really is passionate about this project, isn't he?
Yeah, he's it's really interesting. And when he says that about what you're being asked to do, doctor, is to protect the world, and you know that, and he says his, you know, philosophical rant about why this in his twisted mind is really saving the world. It struck me as very interesting that Lex, that to me, this is one of the things that is really interesting about like Lex becoming the villain. I'm always intrigued with, you know, him becoming his father, that whole aspect of the show, but also looking at how they're different as villains. And to me, that's that kind of that moment there, Alex says that about protecting the world and all that. It seems it's very genuine. You can tell he's not like telling a lie. He might be self-deluded, but he really believes it. And I think that's like one crucial difference in the two as villains. Like Lionel doesn't ever seem particularly interested with protecting the world or any of those delusions of grandeur. He's just like wants to line his pockets and wants to be powerful. And Lex is more like, I want to save slash take over the world.
It's well, and that's what makes Lex more dangerous, right? Because it sounds more like altruistic, but no, actually, that's Lionel just is happy just staying in his corner and being greedy. Yes, and
just Alex showing,
has
showing
worldwide
like a villain
domination aspirations because he thinks he's the one to save the world, right? So,
yeah.
Because here, because Lex is really like, he's like, there has to be no witnesses, right? Because Bartlett comes in, he's like, well, there's a problem. There's a witness. He's like, we got to take care of it, right? And Bartlett tells the doctor, well, you heard the man. You got to tell him what to do. Now, Lex, he never asks who the witness was.
Yeah. Oh, well, I always wonder that. If he knew who it was, would there be any hesitation at all? What do you think? Or would he
no,
just
he would
like,
have been able to take care of it quicker, right? And this Lex? No. He's trying to save the world. All right? So
can't let Lois get in the way.
No, absolutely not.
Can't so let a muffin peddler get in the way.
Yeah, college peddling muffin dropout. Listen to me. Muffin peddling college dropout. That's the line. That's the line I know. So anyway. Then we cut to the Kent farm, because I guess they wanted to use the set this episode. I don't know why they're like, oh, Lois, you can stay with us at the farm. And we get a couple of cute lines about Lois saying, oh, you just want to catch me in the shower again, because they reference it. Like, it'll be like when we just met. It'll be great, right? And, you know, they're practically family, right? I'm like, all right. So is Clark got to sleep on the couch again?
Knowing Lois, I'm sure Clark had to sleep on the couch.
If it were Chloe, it's like, okay, I have superpowers, so you're safer here with me. But Lois, right, be like, why am I safer here with you? I can take care of myself.
She never really questions it, right?
Well, and apparently they're not safe at all, because they have a nice little scene here with Martha. You know, Lois asks Martha, like, hey, since we're family, can you use some of your connections in Washington? We need to get Wes's file, right? Because it's classified and all these things, right? Because Lois is saying all these things about him. She wants to find out what the truth is about Wes. She doesn't believe the company line here. So Martha's like, going to look into it, right? And she explains that me and Wes, we were close. I'm like, okay, where's this? We know this is going somewhere. And actually, in my memory, I'm like, oh, yeah, they used to date or something. It wasn't even that. It was like a first childhood crush, first kiss situation. Yeah. So it was cute. Yeah. It was a very innocent connection, you know?
I like that they kept it really innocent like that. It wasn't, sometimes in the earlier episodes, I feel like they tried to sexualize Lois too much, because she's a beautiful actress, and they're like, cool, let's, you know,
she had a crazy past doing all kinds of stuff, you know. Yeah, you know, kind of like, oh yeah, she was in middle school and they had a first kiss, like, it's very sweet. Yeah,
I love that. Yeah. I love that.
And you know, time back then, you know, earlier when she was talking to Chloe, she did say distance is good for the relationship. That's what all the guys who have moved away from me have said. And they're talking about Jimmy. And, you know, that's perfect for her on the show to have that kind of line. Also,
yes,
look totally at the show. Right? I mean, like Aquaman, Green Arrow. So it does track, right? But, you know, Martha's going to go do her thing, and Clark and Lois are in the barn. They hear something, right? And then do we see Predator Vision here?
I think we do.
Clark is no match for this guy. Right? He comes out of nowhere, throws him 20 feet. Clark gets a taste of how that feels. And then he freezes up when he sees Lois again, you know?
Yeah.
Then he can't like finish his mission, but then he kidnaps her, he captures her, and then they disappear. Yeah, because by the time Clark kind of gathers himself together, they're gone, they're invisible, right? So way to be safe with the camp. The very same scene where it's like, you'll be safer here. Right?
It reminded me of remember in Crisis, where it was like this huge emphasis on Lana will be much safer at the Kent farm. Not at all.
No.
Not one.
People
bit.
Are not safe there. All right. I don't know why people keep thinking this, but anyway. So hey, again, huge on the continuity, because we come back to Clark talking to Chloe about this, right?
Yeah, this is a big continuity scene for sure.
He's like, yeah, he just disappeared. She's like, you mean you could teleport like Alicia? No, it was more like what Grant Garrett could do. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. I was like, what? What? Like, and then they mentioned Titan too.
Yeah, like, he's like, I haven't felt hit like that since I went up against Titan. I'm like, ah, slow down. I can't keep up.
Every time I see that moment, I think it's great, but I always laugh a little bit because I feel like it's the writers, having been on the Krypton site message board, seeing us like making fun of continuity and then being like, all right.
Are you happy now, nerds? There it is. We know they exist. I mean, Alicia references are few and far between.
I know. After she died, it was like poof.
Yeah, I don't. I love that relationship. I think I wish she would have been a season long, or at least a half season long love interest. Yeah. So
hell, like do a couple seasons, like that would have been awesome.
Okay, had they known the show was going to last six more years,
maybe they would have.
Perhaps they wouldn't have killed off a very popular, viable love interest for Clark so quickly. I mean, her getting three episodes alone was for this show was huge. But anyway, Chloe's talking about, oh, they did some research and they found out that Jodie Keenan was the person who, you know, blew up the Reeves Dam, right? And I'm like, what? They have the same last name. Shouldn't you guys have figured this out? Just saying. I'm not sure what they found out when, but anyway.
It would have made a little more sense if the name was a little less unique.
Yeah, you Keenan. Know? Like, make it like Johnson or something. I don't know. But contact Oliver. Him and his team have been going around the world shutting down 33.1 facilities. Not seen here, but you can see that in the commercial break on Justice League, you know, Legion and Doom and Justice, or whatever it's called, brought to you by whoever. Because they just are like, oh, this must be all part of Lexus 33.1 deal. That's what they come to conclusion of. So, all right, Clark, I'm going to go talk to Oliver because he's totally still part of the show, and I'll be back. And it's funny because, like, he does come back as a main character for 3 years, but right now, sure. No.
It's just like, Do you think did they plan for him to come back as such a crucial role? Do you think,
or
was it just going to be? Do you think he would have come back still? You know, the way he did in season 7, do like maybe one or two episodes?
Yeah, that's the way I see it. Because yeah, I mean, season 7's like, hey, look, him and Black Canary, and like there was an idea of maybe doing a spinoff with him.
Yes, totally.
You know, but then it's like, well, we just lost like half our cast. Who's that guy that we had on there? Can we get him back?
Green Arrow,
you
know? Okay.
I mean, I know that. Hey, that made me feel better about season 8.
Me too.
We lost Michael Rosenbaum and Kristen Kirk, and Annette O'Toole's gone too, and of course John Glover. I'm like, what are we gonna do? And I'm like, okay, but you guys like Green Arrow, right? So
having him come back made it feel like, okay, if we're gonna lose all that cast, it felt like, okay, this is a new era now. Like now we have him. It's the hero era of the show. Like.
So yeah, so we'll catch back up with what Chloe and Oliver talked about later in the episode. But you know we've all been here, right? Lex is trying to make it a romantic night at the mansion. He's setting some candles, and Lana's just not having it. And Lex, poor Lex, he's like, I thought maybe if I set the mood,
and then he just the Michael Rosenbaum be doing, maybe not.
Yeah. It's so like Lex is like, he is a bad villain right now, right? And he's done some bad stuff, but you're like, all right.
But wow.
Yeah.
Moment.
It's too real. It's too real, Joe.
Me and my mom always laugh at all the candles on the Lana love scenes. Like in Mortal, candles like looks like it's gonna light the Talon on fire, and then like later on, I feel like there's another
there definitely is one when it's the Alicia episodes. It's when she thinks that Jason's a college guy.
Yes,
you know,
and she has all the candles.
She's like 1,000 candles.
And then he's like, what's going on? She's like, I just thought, I thought this is what you wanted.
This show, man, let me tell you. Oh, man. Defining shows of our lives, telling us things like this.
Well, as a young coming of age, I thought, like, that's how you seal the deal. You got to light all those candles, man.
Absolutely. You know, it's getting kind of awkward here between, I mean, no more so than usual, I'm sure, between Lex and Lana, but Lex is saved by Bartlett because he's like, sir, the asset failed to return. And Lex tells Lana, I'm like, I'll be right back. You know, and Clark sneaks in. Right, just super speeds in. We're all past the whole, like, I guess everybody kind of knows, the people know, but we don't know who knows what at this point. Asks her, like, hey, what's going on here? Lois has been kidnapped. I need to know anything Alexa's been up to. I like how he says, okay, we need to talk, but it's not about you and me.
Yeah, like, he's like, let's get that out of the way first.
Yeah, you know? You have to say that with them, for sure. She's like, oh, yeah, well, he's working on something called Ares. And Clark's like, the god of war. I'm like, oh, thanks, Clark. All those years being Lex's friend finally paid off. Got some culture. That's like, they had to tell us that. It was weird. But then Lana tells him that, like, they said something about an asset. And then Clark's like, an asset? That's what the military calls its soldiers. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
I was thinking, is that a real military thing? Or like, I don't know.
Well, I thought assets like an item. Like if you're like yeah, if you're going yeah, yeah. to go break into, like if you're the military and like we need to go retrieve this dirty bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, yeah,
the the suitcase of the nuclear code with asset has been secured, but not a person. I don't know. Yeah. But that's the thing. That's the word that they use to, like, it must be Wes Keenan because he was a soldier. I'm like, all right.
This. Yeah,
but there's some good dialogue here between Clark and Lana. right? And he's like, Lana, you got to get out of here. You have no idea what he's capable of. She's like, oh, I do. And I'm like, well, then why are you still here? And they like kind of look at each other. It's like, oh, my God. And they're just about to kiss, right? Because Lana's like, we all have our secrets, Clark. I'm like, oh, it's all turned around. We've all come around full circle.
Yeah,
as much as I complain about Lana with the secrets and lies, I do kind of enjoy this dynamic.
Me too.
Of them.
I like it. I like it because I think it's cool. It's cool to see. I feel like Lana matures so much in this season. Like once she has to have this burden of the secret and she has to be a sacrificial hero and protect Clark and knowing what, you know, now what Clark, you know, Clark's secret unbeknownst to him, like, it's like she, I like that there's that, that aspect of her realizing what he's been doing all along for her. And now she has to take that on.
Well, that's the only reason that she could even come to forgive or understand him when, right? I mean, because if you, having been in that spot, you can be like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. Cause I mean, no, I mean, really, you know, we all root for Clark and, you know, we all have those moments like, oh, Lana, stop being annoying. But like, when you really think about it, there's certain things Clark does where you're like, no normal person would forgive that or talk to you again, you know? Like,
right. Exactly. Absolutely. Right. And this whole scenario is something I was thinking about at that time, like season five, you know, late season five, early season six, I was like, well, maybe they'll just have Lex and Lana be together forever. And like, they're like this evil power couple over here, but Lana's like trapped, but she can't get out, but she still loves Clark, but Clark moves on. And you know, Lana's the reason Lex doesn't destroy Clark's life or so, you know, they could have done stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they just had to get Clark and Lana back together, didn't they? They just had to do it. I wouldn't have minded that. I really wouldn't have minded that because Lana got elevated. Clark, Lois, Lex, Lana, right? You know, the big four, if you will. That could be your big four in the future. At the time of season five, I was like, oh, it'll be Clark and Chloe and Lex and Lana because those are the big four of Smallville. But, you know, but hey, it's cool. but I would have been fine with that, really. And I think it would have added like a dynamic to their, because so much of Clark and Lex's relationship on the show was defined by Lana. It ended up being, I wouldn't have gone that route exactly, but they decided to go that. So I would have just gone all in with it. Maybe, you know, I don't know.
Like embrace it for what it is. I could totally see that for sure. And it brings out a lot of Kristen's like best acting too, like being able to, I think she plays really well with Michael Rosenbaum.
She has so many of her best scenes are with him, you know? I mean, it's just, I mean, she, you know, she, there's so many great actors and actresses on the show. And they just didn't give her a lot of great material, I think, you know, especially in those middle seasons. But she is, for a plot line that I never wanted to happen, she is really doing a fantastic job pulling it off. So to that point, right, they're about, Clark and Lana are about to kiss, right? But then Lex, the door opens up and he has to speed away. She's like, she's looking out the window and Lex is like, something's come up. I have to go into the office. The office.
The office. It kind of reminds me of In Memoria. I always laugh out loud at that, you know, when Lionel's got Clark strapped to the tank and he's about to torture him with kryptonite and Lex calls him on the phone, you know, he opens up the phone and he's like, Lex, I'm in a meeting right now. It reminds me of that with this too. I have to go to the office.
Yeah.
He's going to go and do his crazy psychopathic stuff.
Need to return some videotapes, but
yes. I need to return some videotapes.
The window is open. I don't know if it was open before or not. I mean, I guess I don't know. But Lex notices it's open, and he's like, "You okay?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm just a little chilly." And he's like, "All right, well, I'm gonna go." So, but this is an interesting dynamic to have Lana on the inside working against Lex for Clark and all that. So, interesting stuff.
That was cool.
Interesting
it's very stuff departed here. Kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
The insider, I love that.
They're at. Well, we don't know where they are. Lois, I guess, eventually reveals it in your conversation. But Wes and Lois are in some military base, right? Probably the same set they'd be using for, you know, the combat or any of these other places, right? Just warehouse.
Random warehouse.
She calls him Wes, and he's like, designation incorrect, Ares Mark IV. And I'm like, all right. That's how he would respond because he's so programmed. And that kind of shows you there's more than one. He's the fourth one. So it makes sense. And she tells this whole story about how they knew each other and how he got his scar, right? And he tells everybody he was a dirt bike, but really, they got into the general's whiskey and they were, you know, wrestling around and they kissed and it was her first kiss and it was a pretty sweet little story. And then he threw up and passed out and then that's how he got a little scar on his eyebrow. But
that was really good. And it was also great continuity that Lois could drink him.
Yeah, I mean that's straight up with that's on brand for Lois, right? It's like she's trying to break through, and he's like mission incomplete, you know, must eliminate target and all that. But she's like, no, you brought me back here, right? And this is the place that happened, and that finally like breaks him out of. I couldn't tell exactly. I'm like, I guess he's broken out of it now. He just kind of head shake. But. She's broken through him, and it was a real sweet story, like you were saying, a nice back, like kind of innocent, kind of, I mean, you know, underage drinking, not as innocent, but still, you know, for in the lowest spectrum, it's pretty innocent story.
Yes.
And it was you know, kind of sweet, and that broke him out of it, and that was real nice.
That was really cool.
Lex busts in to the lab, and he's all mad, and
he's like, 3 years and a billion.
3 years. I'm like, so you're working on this back in the end of season three?
That's what I was thinking too. I was like, wait a minute. Lex was not the same guy back then.
He would not have been doing this.
Well, you know, the only thing I always think though with the continuity, I guess this is probably just fan, you know, patching it up with the continuity stuff like that in my head. But when it comes to all of that, like, you know, 3 years on Ares or, you know, he's been working on 33.1 or this or that, like the way I fan continuity is I always think he maybe started these projects without going as far as he did. Maybe he had the best of intentions when he started them and they weren't what they became. And as he became more and more evil, then the projects took on, you know, this life of their own. Like the methods that he used became worse and worse. Cause just like when you go back to season four with 33.1, it looks like a pretty chill facility, you know, but then in season six, it's jail.
This is where we find out that they need more alien DNA to make all the meteor powers work together.
Yeah,
they need the alien DNA to tie together. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool, because they had harvested Titan and they made that work.
I like that.
But
that
they have been through so many, because that lets you know, like, okay, the kids just can't. They don't have an unlimited resource, right? That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So when I took from this was that they took powers from people in level 33.1, and just, it's kind of like a Deadpool situation in X-Men Origins Wolverine, right? It's exactly what it is. Right? See, that's what I want to see, like the jailbreak where like Clark breaks all these people out, and then he has to fight the ultimate guy at the end. Like that would have been cool.
I still always think that there would have been such a cool scenario, and they could have explored so much with like bringing back old freaks, you know, and like Clark trying to be choosy and like not wanting to break out the dangerous ones, right. but he needs their help. There'd be so much cool stuff there.
Like, oh man. And this is where Lex goes on his whole, like, cause he's like, he's so mad about this. And that's when he goes on his rant about, it's about protecting the world, doctor. Unstable criminals with dangerous powers keep surfacing. So that's why, like, beginning of season five, I could see him starting this, cause the Kryptonians showed up and Brainiac and, you know, who knows. Right. But season three, come on now.
Yeah. Season five seems like when he really made that leap because of, you know,
aliens invading.
It's like, then he has a real motive for it. You know, it makes total sense.
1% chance of taking an absolute certainty. Anyway, I do like they point out they can't track, because I'm thinking to myself, Bartlett says what I thought. I'm like, can't you just track him? Like, we don't have a GPS on this guy, right? Yes. But he's like, the field he generates makes him impossible to track electronically. I'm like, that is a very smart piece of writing.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Because if you can track him, someone else can track him.
Exactly. And it's a good way to immediately shut down a potential plot hole with something that actually makes sense. Like,
Steven S. tonight, man, he's looking out for us.
Yeah, he's great. He's really great.
This guy's going places. So, and then, you know what? They say we're going to realign the satellite, and now I know why we had this random shot of the satellite at the beginning of the episode. Because they're like, okay, if we realign the satellite, we can reboot the signal, and I'm like, all right, that's fine. I buy that technobabble. But then we come back to Wes, and he's himself now. He seems to have, or at least for now, reemerged, and him and Lois are talking, and he says that, you know, he was in a military hospital, and Luther showed up, and he had offered a way to keep serving your country, right? Because presumably he had been critically injured in that helicopter crash or whatever the situation. I think that was the cover story, but whatever the real story was, and that makes sense. You know, obviously he didn't sign up for this, you know. He didn't know that he was going to be brainwashed and his family's going to be told he was dead. So
It was interesting rewatching it in the context of like a post 9/11, like, you know, the freshness kind of, I mean, it had been quite a few years, but the war on terror, all that stuff. I don't think Smallville has one political thing or another, but it was interesting just viewing it in that context of a soldier being told, you know, to go and fight evil and then being brainwashed and horrible things happening. And
absolutely. No. And, you know, as we see in Smallville, when they tackle politics, there's some universal truths that they doesn't matter which side you're on. Right. Well, for sure though. And yeah, you can totally buy a guy like this doing that kind of thing. And like, you know, like we're saying on the Battlestar Galactica, he's like he's this clean cut totally. Square jaw hero guy. Yeah. And he fits that kind of mold. Right. But then the satellites start to kind of reset him, right? And it's unsettling because he's telling Lois, like, run, because he knows that...
Yeah, that was super creepy. Like,
he's going to get... Like, he can't fight it. He's going to have to get her. So she eventually starts running. And then we cut back to Clark and Chloe, and she's like, hey, okay, so I talked to Oliver off screen, and go watch Smallville, Justice and Doom. And she said that, you know, that they fought some... Him and his team had fought some of these people before. Souped up Rambos, as she describes them.
I love that.
And it basically took the equivalent of a mini nuke to defeat him. So are we to believe that Clark's heat vision is like a mini nuclear weapon? I didn't, you know, because, you know, we'll get there in a second, but I didn't know, like, that's not what that is. Like, so they're talking about this, and Martha is there, and she's like, well, I can help, and she has the file on Wes Keenan, and they're looking through it, and Clark's like, okay, everything Lois said was right. This guy was a stand-up guy, decorated officer, right? And it says, oh, it says here that he was here at this base, and Chloe's like, well, Lois was here at that base. That must be where they knew each other. No, no, no. So that allows them Martha's connections, right? She's cost her like 24 favors or whatever she says, right? A lot of favors to give in at the end of this episode, right? When she gets promoted, right? But that allowed them to connect all the dots. So Clark super speeds off, and there's a cute moment between Martha and Chloe. Chloe says, do you ever get used to that? And Martha's like, no, not really. No. So,
that's great.
So Wes is hunting Lois down. We get some Predator shots here, you know. I mean, and we say Predator, it's not just the fact that it's like the heat vision looking, it's just inverted kind of heat vision stuff, but also the cloaking. I mean, like, this is literally straight out of Predator, right? So that's why we go there. It's not just infrared. And it's really creepy too, because he's invisible, and through the Predator vision, we see his hand go up to her throat. I'm like, oh my
super
god,
creepy.
She's super, right there.
And that also reminded me of Silence of the Lambs too, Buffalo Bill.
Oh man. So then he is going to choke her out. But then, you know, he chokes her to a point where she passes out. So we got a plus one for knockout to keep Clark's secret, because as he drops her, who swoops in but Clark, catches her Superman style. It's a beautiful Clark and Lois.
That's great. That was
moment
a great
there.
Shot.
Great shot. Good. He puts her down, and then there's a little brief scuffle between Wes and Clark, and it's okay. They're saving their budget for next week. It's fine. I understand. But then this warehouse, you know, it's cool. They at least can have some different, you know, environments, because they're in this big warehouse. Yeah. They got some space to play in.
Cool perspectives and stuff.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of push back and forth and that kind of thing. But then Wes decloaks from, you know, up above on some rafter, and he jumps down at Clark with the most ridiculous expression on his face. I would not have been intimidated by that if I saw it in slow motion. I'd be like, this guy looks silly. But then Clark... He uses, remembering what Chloe said about needing a mini nuclear weapon to defeat him, he just uses heat vision and fries him. And I mean, he really should have burned a hole through him, really, if he.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, because he's still a person. He's not a robot. Not a,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's, well, what were your, I was curious, what were your thoughts on, like, the ambiguity of the Wes death here? Like, because some people, when this came out, I remember people were like, oh, Clark just killed him. And people were really upset. I didn't think it was like he killed. I thought it was just like, an accidental scuffle thing. And then Clark didn't really know what to do. And then it was too late. But I could see why some people were like, you know, like, because Clark's waiting there at the end. Mm-hmm. Right.
He just straight up heat visions him. Well, it is something like people like when he was fighting Titan a few episodes ago. I'm like, why didn't he use his heat vision? You know, he could have like this. That's such a like a cheat code power, right? Yeah, you could use against people who are bigger and stronger. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it, right? Because I guess he was like a brainwashed. I guess in my mind he wasn't that character anymore. He wasn't anymore. A human being anymore, right? I don't know.
Right.
That's I hadn't really thought about that. You know, let's start another kill or no kill Superman debate, shall we? Look, he clearly told Clark. There's only one way this ends, either you die or I do. So he really had no choice from my point of view. No, I hadn't really thought about that. So Chloe had basically said this is what it's going to take, and that I was kind of focused on that. I don't think that's a nuclear weapon. That's where my mind was, and that I guess he thought a heat vision would be enough. I think that was just a way to disable him. Maybe Clark didn't think it would. Maybe knowing that a mini nuclear weapon is what it took, Clark knew, well, this isn't that, so he'll be fine. Maybe
right,
that's why.
Right. So that I'll go with sense. That. That's, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, because I just hadn't thought, like, yeah, because Clark, even on this version of Superman, not every version of Superman says this, so mm-hmm. other versions do what they do, and that's its own conversation, as we have all had and will have many times. Like, he's going to kill Brainiac and Brainiac, like, season 7, right? He's like, you can't kill me. And he's like, you're not a man, you're a machine. And he just kills him.
I love
him.
That.
Like, right.
I love that.
So that's how you know how Clark thinks. So, you know, then Clark, he kind of has to, like, sulk in the shadows a little bit because Lois wakes up and she sees Wes is over there incapacitated. And Lois is like, we're gonna get you out of here. And he's like, no, it's better this way. They'll never stop trying to control me. It's really sad.
It's a really sad moment for sure. Like, it's like a really, it's really tragic just knowing if they did bring him back to life, it would, you know, he wouldn't be himself.
He'd lose more and more of his humanity every time.
Exactly.
So, and he has her promise him, Wes, that, like, don't let them do this to anyone else, right? So that kind of drives her into the what her, she's up to in the season finale. And Clark's, you know, lurking off in the darkness there, kind of watching. And I gotta ask, though, what does Lois think happened here?
Yeah, because so she's knocked out. She wakes up and suddenly he's just...
He's like, dead and she's dead. Fine. It's like, what's going on? So, I don't know. Martha and Clark have a wrap-up scene after this. They're talking about how, you know, whenever there's power, there'll be men like Lex to exploit it, right? He's like, hey, Mom, maybe you can do something, you know, being a senator and stuff. She's like, Clark, I'm a small fish in a small pond, you know? And it's true. I mean, I guess Smallville, for all it's not teaching me about life, you know, it was like there are state senators...
Yes.
And
yes.
then Senate senators, you know, like there's a difference because you're like, well, was she going to Washington all the time? She wasn't.
Yeah.
But now she will, right? The hierarchy, like, don't learn your politics from Smallville, how these things work. Because apparently in Smallville, there's a presidential election in 2018. I don't know what happened there. Come on, y'all. Come on. Anyway. Well, they're talking about this, and yeah, it's tough to kind of maneuver this. Like, I think honestly, the one they really tried to was Subterranean, and that was just
right.
I mean, I'm sure they had the best of intentions, but it's like, I don't know, right? I don't know. Well, you know, when Christopher Reeve was making Superman 4, he wanted Richard Donner to come direct it, and Tom Wankiewicz, and he asked them, both of them told him, like, don't have Superman like address the real world stuff, because it's like what you have to answer. Why doesn't he do that then? If you address that, you know.
Yeah, it's really tricky. That's a really tricky. I'm interested in someday when I'm famous and I'm put in charge of the Superman movies. I'm interested in straddling the line a little bit, because it's interesting to me how far can you go. But obviously, there's, like you said, Subterranean. There's examples of where it gets too in your face to going, you know, and it doesn't quite mesh. But I feel like the have you read Superman Peace on Earth?
Alex Ross. Yeah,
I feel like that is a perfect example of how
good examination
to do it
of it
correctly. Yeah, because you see the real world stuff happening around, and he's trying to feed the world, but he's also learning the lesson of, like, teaching, you know, teaching them to fish, like teaching the people to feed themselves as well, and like guiding people through wisdom, which is what Superman is all about. Like, so it shows real world stuff, but it doesn't get too political.
Yeah. Either way. And I mean, there's definitely some, I mean, talking about Subterranean again, right? There's something to be said about, like, hey, the immigrant story, Superman's the ultimate immigrant. I'm like, there is
totally.
There's something there. I just don't know. It's hard. You know, it works with, you know, Captain America, for example, because he's a soldier.
Yeah.
And his origins are in a war that, like, of all the wars in the world, that's the one everybody can at least agree on, you know, World War II, right?
The most clear cut, yes.
So it's man, you start putting in these characters in the real life situations. And I think DC did it best for, like, the, not, you know, speaking of 9/11 again, like, they were like, we're fictional characters, right? Like, this is outside of us. And the whole famous, you know, Superman and Crypto looking up at the firefighters, like, hey, those are real heroes kind of thing.
I think
that was the best way to approach it, because you can't say, like, I don't know. That's a tricky thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But we're not going to have to worry about that much longer, because Martha has been shipped off to Washington, not on the show, because Lionel bursts in, like, the perfect time of this conversation. He's like, well, maybe we can change that.
Well, okay, when I first watched this, I thought Lionel had some ulterior motives here. Did you? Because I was like, why is he so adamant? Senator, let's see.
Well, he always does, man. I mean, he's like, all right, if I get Martha out of Smallville, maybe I'll have a chance, you know?
Yes, get her away from Clark.
But yeah, I mean, if you weren't paying attention, you know, everyone, that we had a senator die, the state senator, like I'm sure the levels and the designations, I'm not too sure of, right? But whoever was like the guy who goes and sits in the Senate, not the Kansas Senate, but the U.S. Senate. Like, shouldn't there be different names for this? I'm thinking of like the church, right? You got the Pope, and then you got the Cardinals, and you got bishops.
They're,
I'm like, why are they all
very clearly differentiated?
Why are they all senators? I don't understand. But anyway, there has been an opening at Martha's job at the next level up, and she is going to take that promotion. Lionel making this happen. I don't know, man. But he brought her this far, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. And this and it's interesting. This is interesting scene because Clark and Lionel are kind of like, you know, they're kind of at odds of each other right now. So a few weeks ago, this would have been a nice happy scene, right?
Yeah. But now there's this tension, but they both want the same, you know, they both want what's best for Martha, but with Lionel, you don't know all the time.
And then Martha's excuse is like, but we're barely keeping the farm running as it is. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that is this. And then finally, somebody with some common sense responds to that. Lionel's like, well, Clark can take care of that. Can't you, Clark?
Can't you, Clark? Yes, I know. That's great.
You can do it in like 5 minutes. You know?
The farm thing worked in season 3 with Clark being away with Red Kryptonite, you know, that, and then it going down. Like, the whole losing the farm thing, which we see in like all everything, it worked there, right? But like, to have it continue to be like a thing doesn't really make sense.
Well, and then and it does work, and then but if you stop back, and Clark even says, even it's the next episode, I think he's like, the farm's been in the family 100 years, and I'm like, then how is it not paid off? Like, what do you
yes, exactly,
understand? But anyway, but this is great, right? Because we get Ben Hubbard reference from Superman the movie.
Clark's great.
Like, I can lease the back 40 to Ben Hubbard. The back 40, which I don't know. It's just
I love that. I love that too.
Steven S tonight watching this show, paying attention, dropping all the right words where we need them.
All the Easter eggs.
It's a good talk coming from Clark, I think. You know, to kind of encourage her to do it. You know.
Yeah.
And for a second there, I'm like, wait a minute. They wrote Jimmy Olsen off last episode. Does Martha have a scene in the next episode? She does. Because for a minute there, I was like,
yeah.
Well, that's a real underwhelming goodbye scene to Martha. That's it. But there's more to it.
I know. I would have been that would have been so anticlimactic if that was it.
So Martha leaving the show. Let's talk about that for a second. Because this she has one scene at the beginning of the finale, and much like Jimmy Olsen, I'm like, all right, move you aside. Ned O'Toole, as I understand it, had been kind of like, all right, I'm kind of over it now. And I see rewatching season 6, especially the deleted scenes. I see why, because they deleted like all of her scenes. Like, the episodes that have deleted scenes in season 6, half of them Martha Kent scenes, and they're good scenes.
And you could tell, I think Annette O'Toole was understandably probably pretty bummed that there was great arcs that they could have done with her, and you know, it's kind of almost like without Jonathan being there, then they kind of started decreasing her screen time,
which doesn't make sense.
Better, like, it should have been increased.
Like,
right?
Jonathan's not here, so you don't have to share the time with the parents anymore.
Exactly. And there's so much cool stuff they could have done with her character. How did you feel about just like the whole senator arc in general for her? What were your thoughts?
I mean, I could buy Jonathan running for senator because he's like, I got to stop Lex Luthor, right? But even that, I never thought you should put the kids in politics. I think there's stuff you could do with them. You don't have to put them on like that level because they want to keep their head down, right? That's the whole point about the kids. And I know you want to do more with them than maybe the actor's like, hey, give us some more to do. But you got to be more, in my opinion, be more creative than like make that. That's so bizarre. And then she becomes the Red Queen. What is that?
I love Martha, right?
I love Checkmate as well. I love all that stuff.
And it's really fun. But it doesn't make sense for the... I just feel... To me, it almost feels like when you go too far in that direction as a storyteller, like when it goes too far to now the Kents are basically these powerful like superheroes, you know, if it goes too far in that direction, it almost feels like Lana in the power suit. Like it's, you know...
Yeah, well, if the characters stay around too long, that's exactly what happens. I mean, you get Lana in a power suit, you got Martha Kent, the Red Queen, Clark can't be Superman, but all these other people are doing this crazy stuff, and there's nothing wrong with the Kents just being farmer. Like every other version of the Kents is pretty much that. But the thing is, like, well, if Ned O'Toole wants to leave, I get it, but Clark can't live at home in Smallville and not have his mom on the show.
Yeah.
So they actually kind of lucked out the senator thing, because how else would they have written her off?
Yeah,
like I certainly hope they wouldn't have killed her.
No, exactly. I mean that I don't think they would have. But yeah, you're right. I don't know what else they would have, what their plan would have been, because Clark would have had to stay on the farm. I mean, it makes more logical sense, like in season eight, like to have him more in Metropolis, and then you could write Martha out gracefully by being like, well, Clark's moving to Metropolis.
Yeah, hey, Annette, look, we'll bring him back for 2 episodes next season, and I'm sure, yeah, you know, oh, fine, right? But it's like,
totally.
Yeah, I thought we were never going to see, I mean, you get into like mid-season eight, I'm like, we're never going to see Martha Kent again, are we? Right? Yeah. I mean, that's like, fortunately, the show runs long enough where she can come so back, cool. You know, it all came back.
Yeah, it was super cool when she came back.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, but yeah, this is, wow, okay, this is the show changing right before our eyes. Like Martha Kent leaving?
Like such a huge, huge staple of everything.
Lex's,
you know,
dad, like, lasted more than Clark's mom and dad. Who would have seen that coming? I thought Lionel was dead in Tempest, right? I was like, oh, Lex's gonna let him die, right? But
yeah,
here he is.
Yeah, I thought the liver thing would have, you know, gotten him in season four. I was so glad it didn't, you know, because he's one of my favorite characters. But like, I thought, okay, his time on the show, you know, season three was peak Lionel, as you always say, and then, you know, now he's kind of played all his cards as the bad guy. Lex has to step into the role. So I was like, okay, maybe the liver thing, and then maybe Lex will kill him, and, you know, maybe he'll get cured, but then Lex will kill him anyway, right, or something, you know, like, but like you said, the show ran long enough, and John Glover is such an incredible actor. They're like, oh, let's keep this guy around. Let's keep, you know, keep him as the unpredictable ace in the hole.
John Glover as Lionel Luthor is the one actor and character that this kind of thing doesn't bother me with.
Yes, you know? Me too.
All this back and forth, you know, I'm like, eh, well, it's fine. You know, it's just, he's so entertaining to watch.
He's too delightful. It's like, whether he's good, bad, you know, Clark's ally or Clark's enemy, he's just so fun to watch. Like, he makes every moment.
I mean, this season now is like, come on, man, what are you doing? Like the back and forth, like, oh, I had to protect, I threatened to kill you to protect you, right? And then the way he leaves in season seven too, I'm like, I don't know, right? I mean, come on, putting Clark in a kryptonite cage, but whatever, we'll get there.
I hope to be there for that one.
Again, the show running long enough. They bring it back, and then they bring evil Lionel back. I'm like, that's so much. So anyway, well done, Anya show. Well done, Anya. So, but yes, Annette O'Toole's presence will be missed. You know, she had some of her best stuff. I'd say mid-season two when she's working for Lionel, and then
oh yeah, I love
end
that
of season
stuff.
Five, where like all her best stuff was with Lionel.
Totally. In season two, I was always so sad that they didn't keep the you know, when Jonathan's like, keep your friends close and enemies closer type card, and then the next episode, Lionel's like, Martha is no longer in my employ.
Literally one episode later, I'm like, did you not
set this up?
You set up the opposite of what you did. But anyway, it's, yeah. So yeah, Annette O'Toole, she's great. And I'm happy to say that she will be back on Smallville down the road.
Yes. And so fun to see her with her real life husband.
That's bizarre. I mean, like, I understand. I'm like, okay, I'll come back, but Michael's going to come back with me. I guess that's fine, but you do know he played Perry White. Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's a conversation. The But then, you know, they kind of back away from that in season 10, you know? I'm like, okay, good. Because talk about world shrinking. How about Martha Kent dating Perry White?
What's going on?
It's like Arrow. It's like Captain Lance dating Donna Smoke. What are you doing? These characters shouldn't even have a conversation, much less be dating, but... There you go. Well, there you go. A slight tangent talking about the life and times of Martha Kent and Annette O'Toole on Smallville. But she's got one more scene next week, so she's not gone quite yet. But then we cut to Lex. He's on the phone, and he's like, I want the body transferred to the morgue immediately. I don't care what it takes. And you're like, oh, okay. I guess they're talking about a Wes. Okay, I got it. Yeah. And that'll come into play at the end of the episode. Then Lana comes in, and she's like, oh, what's going on? He's like, oh, just a complication with Project Ares. And she's like, Ares? He's like, you know, the one that you overheard me talking about with the senator. And I'm like, thank goodness. This made me like this so much better that he knew that she was spying on him, right?
Totally. That he was not being all innocent puppy dog Lex, you know, and just trusting Lana. He was very true to character and intelligent and knowing that she was out there. And this scene was so chilling. It reminded me, it was so scary, like, even though Lex claims, you know, everything I do is for you, Lana, and you know, I love you and all this stuff throughout. Mm-hmm. Like, this scene really showed his priorities and him really being Lex Luthor. And it also, it reminded me a lot of The Godfather, going back to The Godfather thing, don't ask about my business, Kay. You know, who's
yeah.
that?
He's telling her, don't ask about my business, Kay, but then he's saying, like, just ask.
Just ask. Yes.
It's the opposite. But no, you're right. And I, that's right. I really got really conflicted on Lex Luthor. I'm like, no, I like the Lex Luthor who doesn't need anyone. You know,
yes, totally.
But this is a young Lex. He's still trying to salvage some bit of humanity, which he thinks he can find in Lana. And obviously he can't, right? I mean, that really comes to a head next week, obviously, in the season finale. But here, yeah. they still do a pretty, pretty tense scene here, right? Because she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I guess my curiosity got the best of me. And then, like, he kind of turns it on to her here. I'm like, whoa, okay. I haven't seen him have this yeah. attitude to her till now, right? Because she's like, oh, Lana, I love you. All this, you know, all that
yeah,
stuff. Like you
said.
But he's like, you're not a cat, Lana. Don't sulk around like one.
Yes,
like,
that moment was like, whoa.
And this is the most threatening thing he said. And again, the continuity, we've seen it. This isn't just yeah. some like hypothetical thing. He says, every time I've opened my heart to someone I cared about, I've ended up being very disappointed. And I'm like, we've seen it.
Yes. You know?
And just the expression on his face and the way he's talking yeah. to her, I'm like, that's like it's- a don't. You know, the Jedi turned against me. Don't you turn against me, you know? So
that was such a great, like you said, we've seen Helen. Right? Yeah. We've seen all these different women throughout his life. And we felt sympathy for what he's gone through with them. And now we're at this point where we basically don't have any sympathy left for him. But that reminds you of like, of the Lex that we used to root for. And
yeah.
you can see why it's twisted him up so much. And he looks psychotic.
He does. I'm like, I don't know what he's going to, he could do anything here.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, it's scary. But then they just say, oh, no secrets, no secrets. Yeah, it's not going to last. Not going to last. Oh, man. Then we go to the Daily Planet. And of course, Chloe has to drop a, Mrs. Kent goes to Washington. Hilarious. Mr. Smith goes to Washington, a famous film starring Jimmy Stewart.
Because okay. of course, Chloe is, she became like the film aficionado, right? She references that, The Godfather. She has a Clockwork Orange poster in the
palace. Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, all that stuff going on, right? Oh, man. But so they talk a little bit about that. And then they talk to Lois, right? Lois shows up and they're like, oh, Lois is going to, you know, Lex and you know, maybe he'll be behind bars. And, you know, no.
Yeah.
Because the body was gone from the morgue. And no one believes Lois because she works for the Inquisitor, where they talk about crazy stuff like UFOs. I'm like, well, they got a point. So you got a job there writing about how a barn door fell out of the sky. Okay, so. But now she set her sights on Lex, right?
This was the ultimate, to me, setup for the Lois and Lex rivalry that we see in every other iteration.
In other mediums other than this one. Yes, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. This was the, yes, this was the ultimate, you know, it was the ultimate setup. And it felt so organic to, like, the writing, right? Like, Stephen did it, like, it felt so organic that this would be what sets them at odds and that Lois, this would really put her on the path of being the great investigative reporter that we know she's going to be. And I really wish that they referenced it and talked about it more in season 7, because I felt like this was just the perfect setup for that whole thing.
It is interesting because even in our last podcast on Noir, I was like, I would wager that of these 218 episodes of this show, like 10 of them, Lex and Lois interact. Like,
yeah, that's crazy. Right?
I'm like, seriously, like I like having, and I'm talking about yeah. have scenes together, right?
Together,
but not being
yeah.
in the same episode, obviously.
Yeah.
But they're just their worlds never kind of collide. And then talking about just we were talking about Martha and Perry White and all them, like, you know, they yeah. had all the pieces, but never at the right time, right?
Yeah.
Because by the time Lois becomes Lois in like season 8, Lex is gone,
right.
And there's just nothing.
But this would have been the way, right? It's like Lois, you know, we get a brief Lex in jail stint in season 7 that lasts for like an episode, right? But but like, what if Lois, you know, what if they tied things a little more together with Lois putting him away or like, you
well,
know,
they,
later
and they
on,
knew
like,
they knew Rosenbaum's last season was going to be season 7. I mean, they were probably hoping like, oh, we will get him back then. Like, I mean, they knew, you know, and so they did a real good job with Lex in season 7. I'll give it. I mean, for all the
yeah,
shade I get throw
totally.
At season 7, I feel like they did a
yeah.
great job with Lex. But then like they left
set, yeah.
this huge thing, like Lois, and I mean, maybe they felt like we had done so much Clark and Lana and Lex stuff. We just, you know, I don't know. It's tough because yeah, you're right. To me, on paper, again, it's like it's all right there.
It's
like
all,
it's all right
yeah,
there. You guys let it go. But you know, they've done a decent job of realigning Lois to kind of where she needs to be, because for a while they were spinning wheels, man. They were spinning wheels on this show.
They didn't know what to do with her for a while, and now it feels like
we're going
to
last how many seasons? No. Lois, how about you work for a political campaign for a while and go work at the Talon? Anyway, yeah, there you have it. So her sights are set on Lex, and then we cut to Lex, and he's doing his villain thing where he's talking to a corpse, right? He's talking to Wes, the dead body.
This and the prologue are like my favorite scenes in the episode. This is just quintessential Lex Luthor.
Yeah, because then he's like, harvest him for what we need, you know, get rid of the rest. I'm like, man, it's just no regard for human life, right?
So cool.
But they need more alien DNA, right? Because they've used the rest, which again, like we were talking about, I'm glad they have that limitation, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, we're already working on procuring a replacement. And he's like, this isn't the end of Project Ares. This is just the beginning, which is a classic sci-fi fantasy line before you have some shot, right? In The Companion, Matt Beck talks about this final shot, which is one of these iconic shots of Smallville, right? Where, you know, Lex tells the doctor this, and he turns on this. Well, we had thought when we first seen this what's behind this window of just one body, but now it's like 100.
That was such an epic comic book moment.
This is what Matt Beck had to say in The Companion, quote, rather than just have them all visible at once, we had the lights turn on and banks going away from us, and bang, click, 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 click. So then, in spite of the fact that you're always looking in the same direction, you still get the sense of a reveal, where there's some of them, there's more of them, there's a lot more of them, there's a lot more of them.
Yeah.
And I agree, right? Because what if it was just in like, oh, it's like the Raiders of the Lost Ark shot, right? Where it's like you're pushing a box in a room and then you keep putting back, and like there's like 1,000 boxes in there.
Yes.
Side note, completely unrelated to this episode, Raiders of the Lost Ark, the ending, right? Where they're pushing the box in there.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, this is how I interpreted it. Oh man, the government has like 5,000 mystical objects they keep in this warehouse, right?
Yeah.
And I guess you could still interpret it that way, because turns out that was Area 51 or something. But now I'm like, oh no, the point is there's this incredibly powerful mystical object that they put in a box in some anonymous warehouse. And I think it works either way. What's your interpretation at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark?
it's been such a long time, but I think I interpreted it more as the kid you did.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like that moment of like there's, you know, the myriad, you know, endless possibilities kind of moment of the shot. Like,
and I don't know what the intention was, and I think it works either way, so it still works. But anyway, that to say, that this is kind of like that shot where like it's like it is funny because you see the reflection of Lex looking out the window. This shot is so good they pretty much use it again in the next episode.
Only there's the little Lana in the corner.
Oh, the Lana, oh my god, oh yeah, that's right, we're going there with season 7. That's ridiculous, but totally makes sense for Lex to do something like that. So
it's very character.
But yeah, this is a great, this is one of those great Smallville ending moments, you know.
Yeah, it's great. And that lighting thing was that was really like you know, I remember reading that in The Companion, and that just influenced the way that I thought about lighting in film a little bit too, because, you know, back then I was shooting on the DSLR, I mean the mini HD tapes, and shooting like that. But it made me think deeper a little bit about like the tricks you can play with lighting and how that casts your eye inward and to want to peer into it and look into it. Cause that shot just always gives you the feeling that they're infinite. Like your imagination pieces it together in your own head. You kind of create the infinite number that's there. And what a moment too, like just to, It's so great, because I actually just noticed rewatching it last night, the moment that opens the shot is also a long one shot, but it's a little bit more invisible, or a little bit less noticeable, because the camera like tilts down to Wes and slightly up as Lex is like towering above him, and then we tilt up with Lex and the doctor's behind them, so it creates this sort of like you're really there in the room creepiness to it. And then when he turns that on, then the lighting does that same thing. It's such an epic moment, and you're just like, wow, this is like, I said this to you before about this episode, but this moment here is what really is Lex Luthor in a nutshell in this moment. And I feel like and you know, we talked about how much I love Eisenberg, how much not everyone here does. But for me, this is the, I'm talking about characterization, right? This is the characterization of Lex that really personifies who he is. And this is what I want to see on the next big screen adaptation, hopefully directed by me. But
no, man, this is, I mean, he has become the Lex Luthor, right? People are always like, what did he become? No. He has become, there's no question. Season six is the turning point.
Yeah.
Over the course of season six. I mean, he started getting dabbling some villainy in season five, whatnot, but season six is like, no, this is Lex Luthor here. And man, I cannot wait to see the Justice League come back and fight Lex Luthor's superpowered army in the season finale. So stay tuned.
Mrs. Kent goes to Washington. Well, if anyone can give Jimmy Stewart a run for his money, it's...
Yeah, I just wish Lionel wasn't helping her.
What, you think the king of ulterior motives may have something up his Armani sleeve?
When doesn't he? Just right now, his son's a bigger problem.
That's an understatement of the century. I mean, we've always known Lex as a dark side, but with what he's been doing recently, we're headed towards pitch black.
I want to make sure that Lana's nowhere near him when the lights go out.
Well, hopefully he'll be behind bars long before that. I mean, Lois is meeting the feds at the morgue, and once they connect Wes's body with Lex and then Burke's murder...
Don't hold your breath. Wes's body's gone.
What about the feds? I mean, what did they say when you told them what happened?
I work at the Inquisitor. You know, aliens, Bigfoot, Elvis, what do you think they said? As far as they're concerned, Wes Keenan died in action 4 months ago.
Just like it said in his file.
He deserved better than this.
Lois, I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry for me. Be sorry for Lex. He's going to pay for what he did to Wes. And I'm going to make damn sure that he doesn't do this to anyone else.
Prototype got an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1 out of 5.
Seriously?
That's not a joke. Go look it up. He has his reasons. But wow, right?
Wow, his reviews got harsher and harsher as the show went along, didn't they?
They did. I mean, he did not like season six, and I was reading these every week back then, and maybe that was part of my, maybe that was coloring my opinion of it too. I was like, yeah, you know what? He's right. This is terrible. No, but this, come on, man. Like, this is not a 1 out of 5.
Not a
but
one. No.
On the letter grade scale, Roka, what would you give Prototype?
Prototype is one of my favorite season six episodes. I think it's really strong. The directing is really strong. The writing ties a lot of continuity together, and it's such a great characterization for Lex. So I would give it an A. I thought it was really strong and really just exemplified Lex's character, and also just it did a great job showcasing the other characters, like we said, seeing Lois's backstory some more, seeing how she's becoming the investigative reporter, seeing these pieces fall into place. I think it would have been an A+ if we, I mean, this is not the episode's fault, but if we got that Justice League versus payoff, it would have felt even more of an A+. Like, oh gosh, it ties all into, you know, what the finale is doing really well. But yeah, I would give it an A for me. I really, really loved it.
I had to think about this one, but I've really enjoyed talking about this one. Your positivity has talked me up, man. I am going to give this one an A-. I was floating around B+ ish, but yeah, man, you're such a positive fan. So I it's always fun to talk about this. But no, I mean, really, there's some great stuff in here. And I, you know, A-, I mean, like, a couple of things are kind of cheesy. The fight was a little, and little things here or there, like, I'm going to go talk to Oliver now. You know, that kind of stuff. I'm like, yeah.
Remember on Krypton's site when they called that Off-Screenville?
Off-Screenville, yeah. All kinds of stuff's happening. Pete's having some great adventures in Off-Screenville, as we know it. But no, I mean, as far as, like, tying together a lot of the things they had set up over, you know, the course of the show, and then character-wise with Lex and Lana and Clark, some good stuff, and then setting up a season finale.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it's not this episode's fault. They don't have that. They just, all those bodies get washed away, and it's not their fault. So an A for you, an A- for me. Let's go to the tally board. We have a +1 for amnesia count, because Wes has amnesia. That brings us to 56. We have a +1 for blue shirt, red jacket. That brings us to 58. We have a +1 for episode title set in episode, because Prototype is said. That brings us to 49. We have a +1 for knockouts that keep Clark's secret, because Lois gets knocked out, before the end fight. That brings us to 39. And finally, we have a plus one for mind control count because Wes is under the mind control of Project Ares. That brings us to 22.
I'm interested. Where do you draw? How do you exactly draw that line?
Well, if there's someone, like literally typing tells you what to do something.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So it's, yeah, robotic. Yeah.
Or
I gotcha.
Like, hey, go do this. Okay. And then you go do that. Right.
Right. Okay. So gotcha.
Out of the influence, it's like, oh, the flower got me, or the rush ball got yourself. In my stomach. You're not yourself. Yeah. Exactly. So, and then Bechdel tests fail this episode because Lois and Chloe were talking relationship stuff, unfortunately. So there you have it. All right. Well, Roka, a lot of fun talking prototype with you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, so man. Fun. If people want to find you and your work out there online, where can they find you?
Yeah, man. Yeah. People can find me if they're looking for some exciting new superhero entertainment. I'm making a movie right now. It's a superhero film, but it's a very different kind of twist on the genre, set in real life. And it's about kids who are combating the KKK. So it's dealing with real issues of racism, but through the lens of these idealistic kids who are like, well, what if we dressed up as superheroes? Because there's obviously supervillains in real life. So we shot a trailer for it. You can find the trailer on our crowdfunding site. It's Neighborhood Watch on Indiegogo. There is more than one Neighborhood Watch out there, so I'm sure Zach will provide a link in there. And you can also find us on Instagram at Neighborhood Watch Movie.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Everybody go check that out. Good stuff. Good stuff. So as for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also hosting some podcasts over at the United Federation of Podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth. And finally, for the podcast here, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with 1S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Once again, with 1S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next time talking about Phantom. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville was brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Casey Cochran, Darren Kirsch, Joey Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ DeWinna, Jason Skipper, Nathan Rothacher, Mateo Jarrell Santiago, Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Joe Mikindo, Steve Rogers, Molly Ficarella, Atif Sheik, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Mark Idzfoppen, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magnoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clint Kant, T. Hamill, Elena Gibbs, Patricia Carrillo, Omar, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Coso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGilly, Keith Falls, Jay Packett, Cody Thomas, Lauren D., and Alvin Norland. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with 1S. Hope to see you there.